Imagine surrounding yourself with incredible women, women who've overcome challenges, they've rebounded after failures and disappointments, and women who are not afraid to shine their brilliance to make a mark in the world. These women support other like-minded women because they know there is plenty of opportunity for everyone, and that together we really can make a difference, grow our businesses while have fun along the way. This is what Women in Leadership Podcast is all about. Welcome. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Grab a cuppa of your favorite beverage, pull up a chair, and let's get this conversation started. And welcome back to another episode. So my guest today says, when you transform your executive presence to evolve from a leader in your industry to the leader, you do more than just gain visibility and authority. You create an impression that builds connection and relatability, distinguishing you in the minds of the audience and your peers. So joining me on today's show is Loretta Tarazeta. Loretta is the founder of Loretta Today, where she helps technology companies in transitioning effectively and managing the fast-moving growth stage that comes with business success. So with over 20 years of combined experience in broadcast journalism, video storytelling, corporate marketing, and communication strategy development, executive on-camera coaching, Loretta understands the importance of corporate and personal brand storytelling, as well as the impact of connecting with your audience. So on today's show, Loretta's going to share when you perfect what you are good at and you master it, that's when you add true value to others. She's going to talk about why your ambitions should not be crushed by naysayers, as well as it's not about what is beneficial to you, it's what you want your client to achieve when working with you. So we're going to talk about that and so much more. Welcome, Loretta.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for this amazing introduction. I appreciate being here and I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
This is such an important topic for the stage that we are at with all of the technology that is available at our fingertips, making it far more easier for us to build visibility, build our connections. We're not limited to our, you know, our immediate surroundings and locality. And with that, of course, comes requires more education about the things that I'm sure you're going to talk about today. Tell us just briefly, what led you to this industry? Why are you so passionate about it?
You know, it's kind of a little bit of a long story why I'm so passionate about humanizing, you know, executives and the companies at large. That comes from my background being a Lithuanian. So I grew up and I was born and raised in Lithuania, which is my home country. When we moved here to the United States, my journey started here as a housewife. You know, I was pulled from my active life in television to just being in the environment, you know, in the home and kind of trying to figure out this new experience in the new country. And I remember, you know, that one of the key things that I remember was I needed to understand and figure out some sort of benefits or something, health benefits here in the United States. And I needed to call the number of some people, like the organization, right, to understand. I had some questions about the medical bill. And I remember calling, and there was always an automated message. There was always somebody, you know, just saying, press this, press that, press that. And obviously, that didn't disappear. But I kept wondering, it's why there are no real people answering these corporate numbers. You know, I come from a country where you could actually reach a person and talk to a person and get the answers that you need. So that was more like a seed planted in my brain back then, that it just feels odd why I can't reach people. And then when I started doing videos for businesses and working, you know, with larger organizations, you know, it became very apparent that there's this corporate wall between executive leadership team, and that was way back in 2010 when I started my business here in the United States, that there's this wall between corporate and the people actually who are following these brands, buying their products, or interested in doing business with them. And that's where it kind of clicked to me. How can I, as Loretta, help humanize the companies? You know, how can we show executives, people, behind those organizations that are running the business. So that's where it initially stemmed from, just like this jointness that I felt that, you know, corporation is like a magical building somewhere, you know, as if there's no people in there, but actually there are people running the businesses. Now, obviously, over the years, this notion of being present, being more available, being more reachable and touchable and relatable, you know, has become much more prominent since I started, you know, noticing these things. But that's when it started for me, you know, that's when I noticed that these corporations have people in them, but nobody knows who they are. Nobody can really know what this executive is doing, what the day looks like, what they're struggling, why there are certain decisions in the company is made the way they're made. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yes, beautiful. And as you're sharing that story, I mean, if we think and fast forward to now and we look at consumer and community feedback, they really want to know what's going on. They don't like it. It causes almost a distrust now, doesn't it? And organizations need to be aware of it. And thankfully, they are becoming more aware of it. So let's then switch over and start to talk to some of these executives. And this is very important, whether you are a senior executive within a corporation or the corporation is your own business. It's good to do a bit of a check-in. Am I present, if you will, with the presence that I am interacting and engaging with people, whether it's face-to-face, obviously, but also what we're doing online. So let's talk about then when you perfect what you are good at and master it. That's when you add true value to others. Let's unpack this a little bit. It's important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And to me, the company with executive always go hand in hand. You know, a lot of times when people, when entrepreneurs start their careers, entrepreneurs, or they found the company, right? They don't think about how their presence affects the actual company image or reputation, right? How they talk, how they present themselves, how they come across to investors. They sometimes don't think about these things, right? Only as the company starts growing, when these junior executives, as I say it, you know, start growing into the shoes of more senior, more established, you know, leadership roles, that's when they start understanding a little bit of that dynamics that, hey, I represent the company, you know, it's even though I founded it, it's the company that's behind me, right? That's whose reputation matters based on what I say, how I behave, and what I do. So, it, you know, it's a journey. It depends on which path of the career one is, you know, when it comes to mastering certain skills of communication, of appearance, you know, how you talk on stage, how you engage with the audience, how you can, you know, use camera as a medium to connect, you know, with your audiences. It comes with practice, but once you nail it, once you find that voice that you have and are able to translate it to connect with people, it becomes very, very powerful, you know, and it's not a like you just use the terminology, you know, flip of the switch. It really takes some time to get there. And some people are naturally good at it. It clicks in their brains really quickly and they find that their own presence, their own comfort zone, you know, by using different mediums. And for some, it takes a lot of coaching, a lot of handholding, a lot of trial and error until it kind of breaks down the walls and they finally realize what that feels like, you know, and then they start using more and more of that energy, of that feeling that they uncover, you know. So yes, it takes time, you know, to go through this journey.
I'm sure you have worked with many executives. I wonder, is there a common thread for those people who struggle with it and it takes a little bit longer? Is there a commonality that you find is one of the key reasons why they do struggle to find what that is for them, that uniqueness that they can bring comfortably in whatever situation they're in?
It's kind of twofold thing. One is human psychology. By nature, we are afraid to mess up, you know, and especially that comes when you're on camera, right? It feels like once you're on camera, that goes into history. It's captured. That's it. There's no way to erase it, right? So when I used to produce more videos than I do right now and really working closely with executives, I would try to calm their nerves. Look, my goal is not to make you look bad or sound bad. I'm not a journalist who's hunting for exciting news and you know, push it out, you know, and get you in trouble. I'm here representing you as a company leader. And my goal in working with you is to help you sound good look good, make sure your message is clear. So it's a lot, it's a little bit of that human psychology where people are just afraid, you know, same with the stage, right? There's masses of people sitting in the audience. How, what are they thinking? Are they distracted? Are they engaged? You know, all these thoughts are going through everybody's minds in whatever, you know, medium we use. It's in the back of our minds all the time from the human nature perspective. Now, from the perspective of commonalities based on the roles is what I observed. A lot of times, people who are heavy technical engineering have very bright minds, very heavy engineering minds, you know. They're so good at what they do when it comes to engineering. They're so good as individual contributors, but they're stuck in getting forward in the career because they're not able to express themselves. They're not able to communicate, you know, well. They're not able to connect with people well, you know, and that's that engineering mind where it's more difficult to break through. Now, as they are being put, you know, from these individual contributor roles and what they're good at to leading people, they're just thrown in the water, you know, hey, we like what you do. Now you're going to manage the team. Go figure it out. And yes, some larger organizations, they have, you know, development programs that you know, they take the time and train them up to where they need to be over the years. But in that moment where they're being thrown in, well, they have to start figuring it out, right? So that's a commonality from the technical engineering aspect that I've noticed, you know. People who are very, very good at what they do in technology, they are not very good in communicating about technology, and connecting. Yeah.
There's two things that I've often had in discussions with others around a similar topic in what we're talking about today. And it boils down to two things. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this too. So there's obviously the message, clarity and message, what you are saying, the words that you use to bring your message forward is very important, as well as the delivery. And I think the delivery we've touched on, how important is it? I mean, they both go hand in hand. But do you find that often we may have individuals who are good in one way, so the message, they've got a clear understanding of that, they just need to work on their delivery, or vice versa, or you find that if there are issues, they need to look at both, what are you saying and how are you delivering it? What have you found? Is it both important?
To me, it's both. I look at the whole package, you know, what impression and what experience that gives to the audience, to the listener, to the viewer. You know, and you're totally right. Sometimes people are just so great in telling the story, but the way they tell, there's no emotion, you know, the monotonous voice, there's no inflection, you know, and I have this professional illness, as we say in Lithuanian, to just analyze everything, you know, when I'm hearing it, right? Whoever's on stage, whoever's on camera, where are they looking, you know, how are they saying things, you know, does it connect? Are they thinking when they put their eyes upwards, like I put eyes my upwards, you know, when I think, right? So it's those expressions are very important. And if you look at leaders like let's compare, you know, I don't know if your audience knows, but I'm sure they do, you know, Simon Sinek's videos, right? If you look at him, how he delivers the message, it's always with this energy, with this passion, you know, clarity in how he says it, right? Now, if we compare him to Elon Musk, for example, two completely different personalities, but the way Elon Musk carries himself, it's also authoritative. He's contained, he's clear, he's not rushing. I tend to rush, by the way. He's not rushing, you know, in how he says things. He gives himself some time to think. That's his way of connecting, of delivering, right? They can be different ways of delivering. You just have to find your own version of it, you know. Yes.
That's where authenticity is very important. And I'm sure your role is helping people to discover what that is, because I love that example of Simon Sinek and Elon Musk, because they are both, as you said, thought leaders in their specific spaces, but their delivery, their style is very different. And if we had them swap, and this is what we often do, isn't it? If we're not clear on what is that authenticity for me, we tend to then try to emulate others. And that always can come across as something's just not right. You could pick that up, can't you?
Oh, 100%. You know, I literally several weeks ago released a video story of mine on LinkedIn, you know, telling my failure in that, you know, and how I learned from it. Because back in Lithuania, when I was doing my career in television, or starting, I should say, my career in television, you know, I started as a business news reporter and host. Then I shifted to docuseries, you know, that was hosted by this amazing woman who just built the audience around it. She was the brand of those docuseries. And you know, and she decided to move on. She decided to just pursue other things in her life. And I was recruited to step into her role. Mm-hmm. I just failed miserably, miserably. I did not want to talk about this for years. It was so embarrassing how much I failed because I was just trying to be her. I thought, well, in order to connect with the audience, I have to now continue that brand that she established to connect with the audience that's watching these docuseries. And that was completely wrong of me. I didn't know. I was so young. Nobody really coached me. Nobody really told me what I'm doing wrong. And things like, you know, on camera coaching were not existing back in Lithuania. And only through this failure I realized, okay, I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. Nobody's telling me how to make it better. They're just saying, well, be yourself. Well, I'm like, okay, well, how am I supposed to be myself? You know, can you tell me how I'm supposed to be myself? And that doesn't help, right? Like, what do you mean be yourself? Okay, well, what is myself? You know, again, it's all these questions go through your mind when you feel something is not right and you just can't know what that not right is. So I've developed a very in tune, you know, I can really pick up on those personalities just because I've honed in on mine. I'm observing what the personalities with the executive, how they communicate on stage, how they communicate with each other, right? I can sense those dynamics, you know, and I can feel it out and extract it from them, because the ultimate goal is to really have them sound and look how they are in person. You know, like yes. You can see I'm using a lot of hands. You know, my husband always laughs at me, you know. Now you're going to go and talk with a lot of hands. I'm like, yeah, that's how I talk. I just use a lot of hands, you know.
Yeah. I love that you're saying that. I mean, it's so important, and you're absolutely right. So often we're not really clear on that, and it's wonderful when we are in the presence of someone who's able to recognize that and really help us hone that. Speak a little bit more about naysayers, because I'm sure that when we talk about that, we can think of a number of different areas and people who have been in our lives that have been less than supportive. So let's talk about why we should be so careful and not have our ambitions crushed by naysayers. What do we need to do in this area?
And your question is more from the executive perspective, right? If I understand correctly.
Yes.
So in a corporate world, in a corporate environment, right, it's very difficult to break through. And I've experienced that myself. I had my ambitions crushed left and right. You know, I knew what I wanted to achieve. I knew where my heart was inclining, what was limiting me. But I always get a pushback. No. You're boxed into this, right? You're good at this. So just continue doing this because that's where we need you. And at some point, you know, if the organization's culture is not to foster that growth, then those dreams get crushed and they die in that organization. That's why people leave and they look for up-level roles, for up-level salary. And that's actually sad. From my perspective, it is a sad way of building loyalty among employees, you know, inside the organizations. If your only way to advance in your career is to leave the company, well, how do you then maintain that loyalty inside the organization? How do you motivate these people to actually pursue the career, advance with you, help you grow, you know, your business inside the organization? What conflicts with me sometimes and has conflicted with me sometimes, you know, while I was working inside the organizations was, you know, during the town calls, people or leadership team would say, we appreciate your work. We value your work, you know, and then come the quarterly results, we need to slash the heads, you know, and we need to lay people off. So it's really very easy to get demotivated inside the organization where there's no support system, right? Now, on an individual level or when there's no culture of support, I should say, for your growth. On an individual level, right, it again goes back to the personality as well, right? If somebody who is aspiring to get there as a leader to this next level, but he does not have this internal support from their leadership team, right? It's very easy to get demotivated. So my advice would be to step aside and think about, is this role or is this aspiration because of the career that I'm trying to gain inside this organization? Or is it for me, myself, to build out that personal brand and establish myself as a leader, no matter which organization I end up being in? And that helps kind of divide the thinking around it. You know, you're not then slaving, so to say, just for that one organization in hopes things will happen, in hopes things will change. You really then start thinking about yourself as, what do I want? Do I want to be known in the industry a certain way? Do I want to be invited to certain speaking opportunities about a particular topic that I'm passionate about, that I have a lot of knowledge around, right? And start finding those avenues outside the organization itself, right? The funny part starts happening is when the leadership inside the organization sees you out there, they for some reason start valuing you more. You know, all of a sudden you become more important to them because you're more visible, you're more authoritative outside of an organization where they just somehow don't see it that way. You know? So,
yeah. And that, that helps. Yeah. I was just going to say, I love that recommendation because that will also impact you psychologically, because you have then some outlets to be able to feel fulfilled, you know, in what you're doing, even if it is outside. But as you say, that impacts also the way in which your organization approaches you. What about in the situations where you may be held back because other people in your team are not doing the right thing, and therefore similar to the response you received, which was, you're so good at this role, we really need you in this role, and the reason is because other team members are not pulling their weight, and therefore because of that you feel that you are pulled down. Are there any ways in which to approach your team leaders to be able to, because you may really love the organization and where you are positioned to go and possibly have an offering there, and that's where you want to continue to expand to, but it's being kept back because of other team members who are not pulling their weight. I wonder if you could have some advice.
I think the pulling the weight part can be very subjective sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. We as human beings might think, well, this team member or these team members are not pulling their weight and I have to put in so many hours and that's why my career sucks. You know, I think it's very subjective. Subjective definition. You know, I don't have a clear answer to that. I would have to probably think through this angle. I never thought about it this way. I just always think that anybody is in control of their own decisions, right? Mm. And it's outside of who's pulling their weight or not. If that's the feeling they, you know, somebody receives, then okay, what do I do? What is in my control that I can do as in my role right now to avoid that or to step out of it or change something, right? So I wouldn't look at it as, you know, somebody's not pulling the weight. Ultimately, it's still in your control what you want to do and how you want to pursue what you want to pursue, you know.
And that's the important part, isn't it? I think if we take the stance that it is out of my control, I can't do anything about it, that's a very disempowering way to look at it. There are choices, and there is a choice to leave. There is a choice to, as you said, go and participate in outside of the organization, and that can certainly impact as well. But it's just an interest. I had a conversation with someone, and I've had a previous conversation with a few people about that too. It's like, what if I'm held back? My leader wants to keep me in the team because I'm so valuable to them, and the reason is because some of the other team members are not doing what they're supposed to do, and it can be a bit, you know, it can certainly be an interesting
and honestly, yeah, sorry to interrupt, but you know, I go back to that story that I said that I told earlier, you know, how I was crushed down, right? But in the end, It comes down to personality, right? For me, it was, that's it. I'm done. I'm not asking anymore. I'm going and doing it my way, right? I'm done asking. I'm done relying on some other leaders shaping my career. I'm in charge of my career. I know what I want. You can't tell me I'm not capable because I know I am. You're just not giving me a chance, you know?
Yeah.
So it all depends on the comfort level, right? Can one afford just quit and walk out, or can one not? You know, if they can't afford it, okay, can I float it out and start looking for something more aspirational, more that's of a role that's really driving me? Again, that's outside of the draggers in the company. You know, I've had draggers as well that I worked with, but I didn't associate that. It was frustrating, of course, but I was like, I'm in control. I know what I'm going, and I'm just going, you know, and nobody can tell me that I can't do something, you know, but that's also very much personality thing as well, you know?
Yeah. Great insights there for people to consider. As you said, every circumstance is different and we all have to make the decisions that we can stand behind, but it's good to hear how other people have certainly address that too. So the last point that you'd like to share some insights into, and this is what you say, it's not about what is beneficial to you, it's what you want your client to achieve in working with you. What insights can you share here?
Yes. So as I shared in the example earlier, when I work with executives or companies, right, depending on which level my engagement is in, it's not about, you know, my ego or how, you know, higher up I will get because of that engagement. It's more, why did you bring me on board? What problem did you have that made you call me and have this conversation with me to uncover those roadblocks, to help you gain that visibility, gain that authority in the industry that you're striving, but you just don't know how to get there, right? So I always have my clients' intentions first, you know, in my mind. What is going to work for them? What is going to be beneficial for the company? You know, and is this the path? And if I strongly believe this is the wrong path to go, believe me, you will hear from me. I am very direct.
That's your job, isn't it? That's your job to support them. Yes. So.
And if I believe, you know, strongly in something, I will fight for it because my core says this is the right thing to do, you know? And if the leadership makes a different decision, of course, you know, that's out of my control, but I will fight what I believe in, and fight meaning, you know, I will stand for it. You know, I will present arguments. I will present examples, you know, I will express myself in a way where it makes it persuadable, I guess, for them to consider that mm-hmm. opinion or that direction. So if for me, it's not, you know, what I will get out of this engagement is why did you call me? What was the purpose of this? How can I help you? You know, let's uncover, let's peel those layers. You know, I have a process that I normally go through, be it on an individual level or on a company level. I have a six-step process, you know, and I call it real relating lens because it's real relatability and lens is the camera. So it's always for me, I always filter through that connection. You know, you want to, as an example, if a company says, hey, we really want to attend this event that has nothing to do with our industry, but we really want to attend it. Well, how does that relate to your business? This is obviously an extreme example. I know nobody thinks this way, but as like this extreme example, I would say, well, why would you want to do that? What's the reason? Is it really where your audience is hanging out? You know, what are your sales goals? What are your business goals? Is that where you will reach them, right? When it comes on an executive level, you know, they're like, I have so much fear talking in front of camera. Okay, well, let's uncover what are the thoughts going through, you know, why do you have that fear? You know, has somebody commented something, you know, are you aspiring too high to become, you know, the Steve Jobs type of in front of camera? Like what is that threshold that's stopping you and giving you that anxiety, right? And I've worked, you know, back in television, you know, I've worked even in television as well as in the executive coaching environment, you know, I had interviewed politicians when I was a news anchor, and you would chit chat with them behind the scenes, you know, before going into the studio, and they'd be all happy and you know, expressive. You sit them in front of the camera, they start sweating, and that's, you know, when it's a live when it's a live you know, broadcast, I start panicking. I'm like, well, is he going to be able to answer the question now? You know, I see the sweat coming through, you know, their face. And the same with executives. Sometimes they come in so confident that they got it because they're so good on stage presence, but they don't have the understanding how camera works, you know? And then they realize that it's such a different medium and they have to really master it differently and communicate through it differently, you know? So, So it's for me, it's always what drives them. How can I help them? You know, and how can we break through those barriers? You know, and uncover these things that will help with visibility, authority, and impact.
Yes. And if we do a full circle back to what you were starting off today's interview, and you were talking about, you know, for people who really do have a fear and they really do have an uncomfortable feeling of speaking in front of a camera, in the example that you were just giving, it can take a little bit of time, because what we often try and do, as you mentioned earlier, we try to aim for perfection, and setting the bar so high can often cause issues. It's one of those things when someone says to you, don't drop the milk if you're spilling the milk, a child, they're trying so hard not to spill the milk inadvertently and spilling it. And so similarly, you know, what we tell ourselves, we may read something incorrectly, but how we come back, you know, sometimes some of the, I don't know what you call them, pofars, or what is that? When someone makes an error, the way that someone responds and picks up, even after that, it can become something that really breaks the ice, can't it? And as you say, it can take a little bit of a process. There's different things that you break down, I'm sure, to support people, so that when they learn a bit of a skill, they've had some experience, it then can be something that they can just integrate quite naturally in what they're doing, because a camera is just a camera, isn't it? Or it can be whatever piece of technology. But I think these days, are you finding executives really need to be comfortable, because we have the technology now, like Zoom and StreamYard and other technology that is such a great way to share the message and the vision and the mission of the company? Use those tools.
100%, you know, and I somehow thought that when all the business moved to virtual engagement, you know, in this year that we all know what that year was, that people will be more self-aware. But I'm observing that they're still not self-aware. They still don't know how to really connect through the lens, how to set it all up so that it's really not distracting, but also engaging at the same time, and communicate like that, right? And it's always... And that perfection is, you know, I'm going to touch on that point that you made earlier. You know, we always set the bar so high. And I am the one who always sets the bar very high for myself or anybody who works with me. I have high bars, but sometimes I realize I have to lower them, you know, because it is impossible to achieve a certain standard, because not everybody thinks the same way. Not everybody has the same experience in how they got to where they got, you know. And same with, you know, being present on stage or on camera or in talking to media, you know. You won't know all the answers right away. You will mess up, you know, in the beginning. You know, that fear of the first time will always be there when it happens. You know, when you give the first interview to media, you will always question, did I say something right? Did I not mess up? Did I not damage the reputation about the company, right? You will always question yourself until you see either the interview on television or the published, and then you're like, oh, okay, good, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. And then you kind of just become more and more comfortable with the idea. You start finding your way of articulating things, you know. And what I advise usually, especially when talking to media, just have, you know, three talking points that you want to come across, especially at different trade shows, for example, industry trade shows, right? If you, there's a lot of bloggers that just want to come in and say, hey, can you answer some questions, you know? So always be aware that this is media. Even if it's not official, you know, how we understand this legacy type of media, anybody with a camera who's sticking a microphone in front of you is media, you know? So you always have to have some talking points. Let's say if you're attending the industry event, what is it all about? You know, what can I kind of nicely pitch in to get exposure to the company, to yourself, you know, in a soft manner? Have these like bucketized sound bites, because they're not looking for a massive interview, just looking for a little blurb, you know, that they can then share around. And again, that comfort comes with practicing, with seeing yourself, observing yourself, you know, getting harsh core criticism from somebody like me saying, well, you're using a lot of uns and ahs. Every single word is a like word. We have to get rid of it. And people, and we are just not aware of things that we do naturally, because we don't hear ourselves in a presentation manner only when we look back and start analyzing, we start seeing the ticks, we start seeing certain things we're doing, you know, certain like tap with a pen that we're doing or the click, you know, there's certain things that naturally it's, if we're in one-on-one in the same room, they're not noticeable, but on camera, they're just exaggerated. Same on stage, right? They're just, they become bigger. They become more obvious because the whole attention is on you.
Yeah. And I love how you have demonstrated or mentioned Simon Sinek. And I'm sure if we were to speak to people, there are certain people that they've looked or watched present, and it's knowing that they present so well, but it has come on the back of practice. Even to the pause that they have, that's such a well-intentional pause that gives the audience, just brings them along in the storytelling. They do it well because they have rehearsed over and over again. And can you imagine if Simon Sinek had said, well, I made errors, I'm not going to continue doing that. We wouldn't have had the benefit of his.
Oh,
his
my God, 100%. But to add on to that, Anne-Marie, I think people are also faster in adopting these presentation skills or communication skills when they really are good at that subject matter that they want to talk about, you know, because it's easy to talk about things that you know versus that you're not comfortable. And an example here can be, you know, a middle management role, you know, in a corporate environment, right? When you're trying to rise higher in your career, you know, it's easier to start talking about things that you really know what you're talking about, right? And start expressing and start, you know, posting or look for opportunities, you know, in interviews to talk about things that you really know while you're growing into the role of the leadership, right? While you're growing and understanding the team dynamics, the even executive different level dynamics of communication, right? The mechanism of larger corporate infrastructure where you might not be comfortable yet as a business leader to talk about those things. So in that transition, and that's where that's my like sweet spot. I like people and companies that are going through change because they're going from something that they don't like anymore or they've outgrown into something that they want to become. And that transition is so painful. And they just need a little bit of that guidance to experience slowly what's possible. Adopt that slowly, right? See the impact that it gives, you know, on them, on the organization. And then they start wanting more and more and more of that good feeling that it gives, that good reputation that it brings, that impact and visibility that all of that encapsulates, you know. So that transition period is, for anybody, is the most painful period, no matter which life stage you're in. But in your career and in the growth of organization, you know, it's that balance, right? It's fear of the unknown. What if I start changing? Will I damage something? Will I ruin something that I've built so far? Or will it advance me further? You know.
Yes, and it will advance you further if you are courageous enough to see it through, which is wonderful. And I know, Loretta, we've just scratched the surface, but I've certainly enjoyed our conversation today, and I'm sure those who are watching along certainly have too, and those who will be able to catch the recording. But if people would like to find out more about your work and what you do, how you can support them, how can they get in contact with you?
Oh, thank you for asking this, Anne-Marie. My website is loretta.today. Very simple to remember. My name is spelled with one T, so make sure you spell it correctly. And you will find a little bit of information there on what I do, how I can help you, different buckets of the engagement with me, as well as you can download a presence checklist. So that is a very valuable document that you can download, get through filling it out, understand your score, where you fit. There's a executive presence and a brand presence. So depending which bucket you it's important to you, you can fill out both if you're a company leader or founder, or you can fill just one, you know, whichever is important. But it's a very valuable tool for anybody who wants to just assess where they're at right now. You know, like, how do I score? You know, you have a lot of questions there that drive to that to that point of understanding your score. And if you feel like, you know, you need some help, you need some nudge, you need some guidance, you know, then obviously reach out to me and I can help you out and we can figure out a phased out approach of how can we tackle these little small things first before we tackle big ones.
Yes. And who knows, you may be the next Simon Sinek in your industry.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Loretta, for sharing your insights with us today. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for having me in your podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to share my knowledge with your audience.
Hey, it's Anne-Marie. Before I go, are you a coach or a consultant who feels like the world's best kept secret? Your experience is vast, yet secretly you're frustrated because despite all of your hard work, you're just not getting the visibility, the recognition, or new clients you'd hoped for, and you don't know why? I've created a free resource that'll help you build visibility, generate leads, and enroll dream clients with ease because you're seen as a trusted authority, even in a crowded marketplace. And you've positioned yourself as the choice versus just a choice for your dream client. To get started, go to annemariecross.com/gift. That's annemariecross.com/gift.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.